So welcome to New York Insight, the POC set. It's so great to see you all tonight. Can we, since it's just a small group, can we just go around and say our names? I'll start with myself, because perhaps, I think I've sat with everybody here. Have I sat with you before? I feel like I have, but I'm not sure. I don't want to do that whole thing of like, you look familiar. But I feel like I always do. So my name is Karen Williams, and I'm back for just the winter break. Some people know I'm in Mississippi right now, and so I've been down there teaching, and so when I come back, I always try to come back to the Sangha and see what I can do to help out and things like that. So I'm filling in for Kate tonight, who is also a transient person who stays in Philly. So I hope this worked out great. So, anyway, so that's me. I'm Karen. Thank you. The telling of a little cold. So thank you all for coming tonight. So tonight we're going to keep on with the, we've been doing this series of looking at Thich Nhat Hanh's 14 Precepts of Engaged Buddhism, and I don't know if people have been coming to the series, and so I won't go through all of them, so they're contained in and of themselves. And so tonight, I'm supposed to, and sorry for the iPad thing, I just got in town, I haven't hooked up to the printer, and I'm like one of those, and I was like, I want to print this out, so I'm not one of those things that I'm attached to my technology or anything like that. So it's the 10th mindfulness training, and so it's protecting and nourishing the Sangha. So the way that I want to do this a little bit tonight, not as a traditional kind of like, you know, Dharma talk, so I'm going to talk to you about, I'm going to tell you what the training is, the precept is, and give you a couple kind of, you know, things that I've been thinking about in terms of it. And I want us to kind of talk about it, because I think this one's going to act is actually really rich, and it will, you'll see what I mean after I read it. Okay, so the 10th mindfulness training, protecting and nourishing the Sangha. Aware that the essence and aim of a Sangha is the practice of understanding and compassion, we are determined not to use the Buddhist community for personal power or profit, or transform our community into a political instrument. However, as members of a spiritual community, we should take a clear stand against oppression and injustice. And that's the shortened version of it, but I'm going to read the longer version of it. We should strive to change the situation without taking sides in a conflict. We are committed to looking with the eyes of interbeing, and learning to see ourselves and others as cells in one Sangha body, as a true cell in the Sangha body, generating mindfulness, concentration, and insight to nourish ourselves and the whole community. Each of us is at the same time a cell in the Buddha body. We will actively build brotherhood and sisterhood, flow as a river, and practice to develop the three real powers, love, understanding, and cutting through afflictions to realize collective awakening. So that's like, that's the 10th one. Do you want me to read it again? Yeah, okay. I'll read it one more time. So, protecting and nourishing the Sangha. Aware that the essence and aim of a Sangha is the practice of understanding and compassion, we are determined not to use the Buddhist community for personal power or profit, or transform our community into a political instrument. However, as members of a spiritual community, we should take a clear stand against oppression and injustice. We should strive to change the situation without taking sides in a conflict. We are committed to looking with the eyes of interbeing and learning to see ourselves and others as cells in one Sangha body. As a true cell in the Sangha body, generating mindfulness, concentration, and insight to nourish ourselves and the whole community, each of us is at the same time a cell in the Buddha body. We will actively build brotherhood and sisterhood, flow as a river, and practice to develop the three real powers, love, understanding, and cutting through afflictions, to realize the collective awakening. And that's probably my alarm for something. Sorry about that. So, it's a lot to take in, right? It's a lot to take in given our current kind of political things that are happening, whether it's like the new awareness that we have around hashtag MeToo or the tax cuts or the things that are happening in the Middle East, or there's like just like a whole host of things like, you know, continued racial inequality, mass incarceration, climate change, right? So there's a whole list of things, right, that's happening today. And so it's easy for us then to kind of bring those things, you know, into the space here, right? And wondering, like, where does, like, our practice intersect with what is going on the outside? And so I just want to offer just a couple of words on that, and before I do that, I'm going to take it kind of outside of like what we might be thinking about in terms of what's happening with our president and everything else. But when I read this, I started thinking about that kind of the phrase in there about not taking sides, right? Because like, that's like that tricky part. You're like, what? I'm not supposed to take sides here. There's like a right, there's like a wrong, or, you know, this is fair and this is like just. And so so I started thinking about this in the context of my profession. And so I teach at Mississippi State University. This last past semester, I taught this class, Racial Minorities. And I get a whole host of students that are in the class. It's a predominantly you know, African Americans, black students that are in the class. And then there's a small contingency of white students in the class. And across the board, there's people with different relationships to race, ethnicity, and racial inequality. But one of the things that, you know, as someone that's holding that space in that classroom, part of you know, my job, or, you know, my responsibility in a sense, is making it so that all of the students feel like they have a space that they can talk, right? That they can voice, whether they're, you know, far left, or they have conservative, or they're far right, or whatever, because I get the gamut in the class sometimes, right? And it becomes, you know, challenging how, when we talk about white privilege, do we address it in such a way that it doesn't shut down the white students, but it also doesn't give the students of color just kind of like this open arena to kind of blast everyone, right? And so it's challenging, right? Because I have my own political views and my own thoughts about it, right? And my own community that I can go to and talk about these issues, but also I'm trying to build this kind of like learning space where people can move from where they are, right, and not feel like shut down. And there's always that one student, sometimes two or three, but there's always that one student where you're like, "Ooh, you got me on my edge. You're about to get my goat," right? So, and so I have to. And this is where the practice becomes really important for me because it allows me to kind of like take that pause to be like, am I reacting to what he's saying? But can I actually be open, right, about and listening to what he's actually bringing to the table? Because in some ways, we're all moving from a position of not wanting to suffer, right? And so the Buddha talked about the first noble truth being that there's suffering, right? And so if we look at how we react or, you know, how we respond to things, part of this is like not wanting to create more suffering for ourselves and hopefully for others, like this kind of like collective, like kind of working towards this collective awakening. And then we think about it, even like when we're kind of, even with the simplest things of being hungry, when we move to go eat and we decide what we want to eat, because we don't want hunger pains. We want that sufferingness of, like, we might not think of it as suffering, but there is a suffering, is it? Like, if you're, like, hungry and tired and we go to sleep because, you know, we want to rest. We don't want that kind of, like, that little low-grade, maybe the low-grade kind of, like, suffering. So these all these, like, small things. And so when I bring to the classroom, this person is, when they speak about, the Black Lives, because we talked about Black Lives Matter movement, when they speak about Black Lives Matter movement and not knowing kind of what it's about or why did it come and, you know, and that it's, and have misconceptions about it, there's something else in there, not just the fact that there's not a clear understanding, but there's some kind of wounding there. There's some kind of like, this is like causing me some suffering. And so part of my, I take as part of my responsibility is to be open enough to hear that. Not that I have to agree with it or you know, validate it, but I have to allow that to be in the space with many other things, right? So I offer that, you know, so when we come to this Buddhist community, the spiritual community, you know, we all have our own political stance and understandings of what's happening today. And not to say that, you know, those things can't be talked about, right? But this is also a space, a resting space for many people, right? A space of trying to not say let go, but be different, right? Because we might do that work all day long, right? And so this is a space where we can kind of like come and like, you know, shed that and like regain a sense of like energy so that when we go back into the world that we can then better like respond, right? And I think, and so that's one of the biggest things that I kind of take away from that. But at the same time, he's also saying it's not just sitting. Like, this is not a passive kind of like bypassing of not acting in the face of injustice, right? And so even though that we're not creating some political platform and I'm not, you know, rallying us and be like, okay, we're all going to do this, right? You know, but in our own ways and looking at our own capabilities and what's possible in our own bodies and hearts and minds, we can then respond to injustices, right? So for some of us, it might be in the streets and it might be protesting. But some of us, it might be sitting and doing one-on-ones. And for other of us, it might just be the small things that you do in life, right? And so it is that kind of like, but it is a call for us to move, right? And let's not forget that, right? Because part of it is saying that that we should take a clear stand against oppression and injustice, right? And so that's actually saying for us to do something, and in doing that, you know, part of the practice that intervene is seeing how that we are all connected, right? That there's like this deep, you know, we always talk about Martin Luther King's quote, you know, that I can't be who I am until you are who you are, right? And looking at the kind of like flows and that interconnection like of our lives. And I see that in my students, you know, like I can't be the teacher that I want to be unless you are the teacher and the student that you can actually be, you know, and they bring a deep sense of history to race and racism and all these issues living in the South daily. And so for me, I'm teaching and I'm learning, right? And so I'm there kind of taking it in and seeing how connected that interconnection that I have with them, right, has been really kind of like beautiful. And so the last thing that I thought about when I was thinking about this was the question came up for me is like, what is it in ourselves that we want this confirmation of our beliefs, our values, our political positions? And so if we kind of had that kind of like, wait, you know, maybe this should be a political, and maybe this is like, you know, that the ego is always looking for that kind of confirmation when we talk with our friends or we make that post or on Facebook. I'm not telling you not to make posts on Facebooks or Instagrams or anything like that. But there's, like, what is it about ourselves, right, that wants that kind of, like, constant affirmation of that kind of constant confirmation, right, of this is what it is, and so much so that we become dogmatic, right, that we have the potential to become dogmatic. So I started thinking about that a little bit, and that was just kind of like a side something for you to, so can we not bring that, you know, into the space? What does it mean for us to not bring that to the space, right? To be different here. So yeah. So I want to end there. So those are just a couple of things that when I brought this up, because this was on my edge, you know, when I told Kate that I would do it and I was like, what's the topic? And I'm like, this is perfect for you, Kate. And I was like, this is my edge, because you know, not like politics and the Dharma, because I'm one now. I don't say my older age. I will say as I've gotten older, I've left the streets and been doing a lot of much more. You know, stuff in the classroom and wanting to organize and get my students kind of, you know, politically and, you know, intellectually engaged with things that they might think that is outside of kind of like their realm of like, you know, why should I be concerned about that, right? So that's been, you know, my kind of task as opposed to, you know, kind of in the nitty gritty of things these last, 10 years or so. But again, like, that's why I say it's important for us to find our own path of engagement, right? And that might change, you know, because change is constant, right? And what we bring to that. So with that, I had an idea instead of dyads, because I know we always do dyads. I want us to do like small groups, because I think there's something rich about this in thinking about this idea of kind of this collective awakening and looking at love and love, understanding, and cutting through afflictions, right? And that's kind of like the heart of this, of kind of like protecting and nourishing like the Sangha. Which is, I forgot to mention earlier, like the Sangha is the third jewel, you know. So there's the Buddha, the Sangha, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, right? And so there's something really potent about what the Sangha can actually bring, you know, because when Ananda asked the Buddha about the whole of the practice, you know, this kind of idea of like friendship. And he's like, no, I mean, is that part of the practice? He's like, no, you know, having admirable friends in community is like the whole of the practice. And these are our admirable friends, right? You know, and this is like part of the whole of the practice here. So in that sense, and split into small groups. So it looks like a group of three, a group of four, right? And I just want us to kind of openly talk about, you know, this 10th mindfulness training, that Thich Nhat Hanh is offering us. What resonated for you, right? Or where are those kind of like sticky areas where you're just kind of like, not quite there, but you might want to kind of like contemplate and talk about a little bit more, you know? Sound okay? So we'll do that for a few minutes. We're probably gonna get out a little bit early today, you know, just to let you know. And so if you usually have to run out for a train, don't worry about it. I'm gonna get you to your train. Okay. So do you need me to read this again one more time? So the 10th mindfulness training, protecting and nourishing the Sangha. Aware that the essence and the aim of a Sangha is the practice of understanding and compassion, we are determined not to use the Buddhist community for personal power or profit or transform our community into a political instrument. However, as members of a spiritual community, we should take a clear stand against oppression and injustice. We should strive to change the situation without taking sides in a conflict. We are committed to looking with the eyes of interbeing and learning to see ourselves and others as cells in one Sangha body. As a true cell in the Sangha body, generating mindfulness, concentration, and insight to nourish ourselves and the whole community. Each of us is at the same time a cell in the Buddha body. We will actively build brotherhood and sisterhood, flow as a river, and practice to develop the three real powers: love, understanding, and cutting through afflictions to realize collective awakening. So just a group of three and four, however you want. I'll give you about 5 minutes or so to kind of just kind of. Is it okay to stop over? Yeah. So let's like open this up. So let's talk about this a little bit. I mean, I'm not quite clear. I got some edges in this one too. where are our edges in this? Like, and what can we, what resonates, what makes sense for us, but also where is that kind of like, I don't know, Thich Nhat Hanh. I need you to come over and have a cup of tea with me so we can discuss this a little bit more, right? And understanding like a lot of this, like, they are practicing these 14 precepts, definitely in the monastery situation. And you know, it's very different when we I think we take some of these precepts and then we practice them outside of those like more kind of I don't want to say call them contained. I'm the word I'm looking for. These kind of more I guess like sterile-ish, but not quite sterile-ish. But other environments, right? But it is about engaged Buddhism, so we are supposed to kind of take these outwards, right? And work with them, and that's part of the practice. So anybody can. Because I know there are some rich discussions, and if anybody wants to share anything or ask something.
actually work in politics, mm-hmm. so for me, like, my day-to-day weekends are often in this world where it is, like, a right versus a wrong, and that seems contradictory to me, or it kind of challenges what you've been discussing, right, because there is, especially today, politics, there's not a, let's listen to the other side. My question is, like, what I was thinking is it possible?
I can't answer that question. That you can come, which is, like, the next week is around livelihood. And so, right, like, and I'm not saying that, right, or skillful livelihood, or I'm not judging or what your livelihood, but that's an internal investigation for yourself. But I would, but on the one level, I would say yes, it is possible, right, to practice, to be an engaged Buddhist, if that's what you want, or to engage in this and do political work, right? Because we saw several of people look to, you know, King Gandhi or, Malcolm X, but some other, like, you know, just like other people that, you know, I put the women who started Black Lives Matter up in there, you know, too, that are, you know, do, like, they might not say that they are engaged Buddhists, but they are fighting, you know, around, like, around oppression and injustice and bringing those things to light, right? And doing it out of love, right? So I think that's one of the key things for me is, like, when we begin to do our political and the work and or our work around oppression and injustice, what's our motivating, what's our heart space like, right? You know, is it the love that for people that are, for the people that we're fighting for and for a more just place? Or is it around, you know, the hatred of the other, right? So I think, so that's something to ask, like, where's the heart in that work and how these principles can guide?
Within the Sangha as part of that.
Don't use it for as a position or a platform for power.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that it's, where did I go? The environmental march, and mm-hmm. Look who voted was there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was, you know, there is a way of doing it. I was just thinking when this came up, is that yesterday, I have a neighbor that I like, but I knew that I had to, you know, for me in my practice, mm-hmm. I had to hear what she had to say.
Right.
It was, you know, it's an interesting thing. She's 68, she's white, and she's got such, you know, I had to hear it. I mean, I think as a Buddhist, I had to hear it, I mean, in terms of my practice. And we talk about not judging and, you know, being with someone, but I needed to, a certain part of me, because I am awakening in terms of political action, but I need to hear the other side, and that's what I needed to hear, how she said it. And she said a couple of things that, like, we were walking and we were having it, you know, it's interesting being with someone that you're, like, totally different, mm-hmm. but you're really opening, and she felt comfortable. I thought about you and your students. She felt comfortable saying it,
mm-hmm.
And we were talking, and we got on the whole thing about the sexual assault, and she said, "Well, I don't know why they, you know, are making a big deal out of it. You know, it's like this happened." happened, you know, this happened to women. And, you know, I sort of like gently started, I mean, it's interesting because it was like, I've been, my practice is really intensive. I mean, I've been practicing for a while, but it was like I was observing, and that whole thing about, you know, right speech, right action, and, you know, it was like some things came into my mind that I wanted to share with her, especially her being her age. And, you know, interviewing Hugh Hefner and what they did when he developed Playboy, I mean, I've heard interviews that, I mean, it's, and, you know, I thought women in the military, and she'd say, you know, you just put up with it. And it was interesting that I didn't go there, and I was just like really being, I had to hear that other side, you know, and, you know, some other things, and it was a lot of stereotypes, like, you know, not really looking at the real people who are oppressing, but, you know, attacking the, you know, the elite, the artist, the, you know, it was just sort of like all that, you know, it's like just talking to her, and then, but it was like I was hearing what, and I say that not like what someone who doesn't think like me thinks. And I felt that my Buddhist practice, I mean, she wasn't insulting to me. It wasn't like I was walking with a racist who just assumed that I'm okay. You know, it wasn't, that's what made it very interesting. And, you know, and it's like I, you know, I said things, and it was just like really, like, not a position of power. And she needed to understand, and the way to do that was not to come from a, an argument, but to be an understanding of it. And she knows it's like Buddhism is not being a doormat. You know, but it was really interesting. And then today, she sent me a text because, you know, she was saying 42nd Street. And it was like really out of concern for me because she knows I'm coming to the city. And, you know, and then when I looked at what was happening there, first thing I thought was this is an opportunity for some people to feel like, see, they're all crazy, they want to kill us. And, and it was just like all that stuff. And then I just, you know, I sent the text back saying, thank you. And I said, you know, it's just, you know, the thing that is so dangerous for all of us is that we'll let our prejudices and our fears destroy all of us because we make decisions. And, you know, thank you so much. And just, I'll just shut up with that because I've been thinking about this a lot. Like, how do you do this in a day-to-day thing, you know? And then I sent her, her mother died recently, and I found this thing on ARC, and it talked about Medicare and how it's going to be cut. And, you know, she's like really much in her that bubble, you know, and I know she voted for Trump, but she's like a good person, you know, it's just very, it's so, this was like the best thing for me to really, you know, exercise and practice. So I sent her this thing from ARC, and I said to her, I said, you know, this is a really good article because they do these position papers that really talk about these issues. And I said, you know, you, you know, you'll be able to see it not from the Fox, MSNBC slash Fox. And I said Trump. You'll see something that's more, you know, objective. And then I deleted Trump because, like, it just in my practice and being aware is that that's provocative. That's not what I'm trying. And I'm not trying to like convert her. And so I just said it in a really like loving kindness kind of way, and you know, I just sort of like sent it back, and I thought, this is how I have to engage with something that's interesting. This is not someone who's like trying to like beat me up or hurt my son or, you know, trying to like hit me with a club or any of that. It's like that, and it wasn't productive, so it was really interesting. And you know, it's like I'll keep talking to her, and it's just I think that, I don't know. I think that that's where the heart of my practice would be. And I also feel that, you know, I am, like I said, I am getting politically active and I'm finding my way. But I just really felt when we talked about, like, the power thing, that, you know, not using it as that. Because she knows I'm, she knows that I practice. And she's sort of like, oh, okay. It was just really, it was interesting. Because just as we were, like, going out to meet. We had a really nice time. We had like nice lunch. We were like walking in Prospect Park. It was like I could just in myself, because I've really been practicing breath. I mean, seriously, breath. Like, what happens to your body when something, when you're confronted? And it was even the cold, I could feel my body just go, okay, here it comes.
Yeah.
You know, and that was, you know, I thought, I'm so glad I do this practice, because I don't think without this practice I could have been gently reacting or not reacting to someone who was taught, especially with this with sexual assault. Anyway, I'm sorry I talked so long, but I think this is a very important thing. I do think it's really quite workable to do.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing. Anybody else? We have just a few more minutes.
There was a, you said taking a pause on the, there's a magazine over there, I think it's either Lion's Roar or Tricycle, or it talks about the power of taking a pause. Over there's an article or whatever. And Pema Chodron has a really wonderful article, I think it's in Lion's, I think it's in old Lion's Roar, but she talks about the beauty of taking a pause and, you know, daydreaming. You know, of just like the pause is so important, and the pause is where we can begin to break our habits, right? So if we can see, if we can take that kind of that pause, and we can reconnect with our breath, our the feelings, our body sensations, then we can move out of a place of response. So, kind of like taking a step back. I love taking a pause. You know, even when I'm reading papers that speak about, you know, Black Lives Matter is about cop killing. Because I get those papers, I have to take a step back and be like, okay, Karen, like, don't write all up in the margins what you feel, but let's like. Like, what is the content and how are they saying and what are they saying? So, like, where can I take a pause, acknowledge, you know, so that I'm not greeting out of, like, you know, because you're not agreeing with me. But what is your argument around there? Is it substantial? Is it, have you well-crafted, you know? So I have to come back to the basics sometimes for that, you know. Is it grammar on? Did you actually follow the directions? Did you, like, you know, are these credible sources? You know, did you go to some kind of, you know, .com police, you know, and really no credible source? And, you know, I don't know, you know. But, you know, so then you kind of go back. So, but I think what's important, so the pause is important, right? And then coming back to what Thich Nhat Hanh is saying here, is that this space here is important to keep it as, I feel like he's talking about keeping it as a sacred space, a spiritual space, right? And not as a space of like, where I'm like, hey, you wanna come to this, you know, or something like that, right? You know, so, I mean, but you can, you might find that friendship here. But this, right here, our Sangha itself, right? That in itself, this is not a political platform, right? For me to take this seat, or for any of you all to take this seat, or wherever seat we're in, and make it a political agenda, right, is not, is not necessarily conducive, right? So be mindful of that.
You know, one thing that I was thinking about what you said too is that I got that feeling about that, like when you're sitting on a cushion and you're meditating and you're taking that breath,
is, and I didn't make this up, I heard this from a teacher, is that is using that same thing of following your breath off the cushion, like mm-hmm. walking around and with your breath, and being aware of it, and almost in the same way as you would when you're sitting and meditating.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I thought about that a lot with my experience, is that I was really aware of my breath in the same way that I meditate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that was, you know, something that was really important to me. It was mm-hmm. like the first time, I think, that I ever consciously said, this is the way that I'm, you know, developing concentration when I'm sitting and I'm doing my sitting practice. And then it's, you know, he just basically, this teacher said, off the cushion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's, you're doing it. Because the whole thing of being aware is to, in every posture that you have,
mm-hmm.
sitting, standing, lying, you know, the whole thing. And so, and I also really appreciate that, what you said about the quote, because it's not a political thing. I've heard this once here. It's like what's happening in Myanmar with the monks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's, that's not about, that's not the Sangha. I mean, what is going on with them? Because, you know, there's that certain extreme. I mean, that's like a really important thing, because it's like I felt like that's not about what Buddhism is. That's not about what the practice is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting because, you know, when one reads about that, you know, they're really, you know, if there's a sense that they're perpetuating a political position in the context of Buddhism. So, you know, when I read that, I thought, you know, that's the danger of ever thinking about this practice as a political statement. But,
right. But at an end, at the same time, it is, we can shed light on injustice, right? And so not, I wasn't there when I'm out judging or whatever, but just also understanding that part of this is also shedding light and being aware, you know, of what is happening out there, and that we can do something like about it, and that we shouldn't be, that we should be engaged in those injustices here, right? So that we're not, so it's off that cushion, so we're not just like, you know, I'm not going to think about mass incarceration. You know, I mean, like, you know, it's like, you know, so those things, because they are part of what Angel talks about. We have a social body, right? And that it's important for us to remember our social body. And our social body is all these external things from our family, from the outside, from the politics or whatever. And that makes our social body. And when we come in here to sit, we are sitting with that social body, right? It is not separate from this kind of, you know, spiritual practice body. That social body is there. It is imprinted on us, right? And so we have to deal with that, right? And all of those issues that come with it. So let's, like, share the marriage. And, like, so finding yourselves in a comfortable seating position. Feeling the connectedness of all beings and the beings in this room. Allowing the words and stories that were shared in our small groups and our larger group to kind of lay on us and move through us. So we practice not just for the liberation of ourselves, but the liberation of all beings, such that there is this collective awakening, realizing that we are all part of this Buddha body. So as we engage with the
the practice on and off the cushion. We become mindful of our breath, our body, our heart's intention. May all beings be happy. May all beings be safe and secure. May all beings love and be loved. May all beings find joy and freedom in this lifetime. And so it is, and so we allow.